First of all, I would like to thank everyone for coming out here this evening in support of our candidate for City Council for the Ocotillo District, Norma Alvarez. I'd like to thank the Tohono O'odham Nation, Lorraine, and the representatives that are here this evening. Norma is here to share with you her position on what she considers are the important issues in the Ocotillo District and the City of Glendale. She is in support of the building of the casino in an effort to provide jobs. She's also in support of being more accessible to the public and in favor of youth programs as well as senior programs. She's also concerned of the safety of our city, and she's always in support of our police and our fire department. I present to you now our candidate for the Ocotillo District, Norma Alvarez.
I want to thank all of you for coming out to be with me today. I want to make some introductions. I see there's some other people here that are also running for the Vero District and for Ocotillo. For Ocotillo, Bob Bohart. Bob. Mickey Lund is from the Vero District. Anthony Kearns is from the Vero District. And I think all of you know we're for change, so I'm glad that they're here. Whoever, you know, I want to be the next council person, but if I'm not, I've got some good people that are with me. So it's going to be a fair election. I am very interested, as I told you before, in bringing in the casino to Glendale. We've been hearing a lot of stuff that we want to clear tonight. We want to clear up. I didn't know that I had a very good friend that is from the tribe. Lorraine Eiler. She's from... She and I worked together at Good Samaritan Hospital. I was Alvarez and she was Beauty. So she'll always be Beauty to me. So she's going to head up with the other people that are here. She's going to introduce them and then they're going to give a presentation. Please ask questions because we need to clear this up. Like I say, I'm 100% behind the casino. I think it's going to bring jobs. And the tribe is very generous. Our kids, our elderly, all of them need, we need their money. So I'm going to support them 100%. So, Lorraine.
Thank you so much. You know, I moved to Glendale in 1972, and so off and on I've lived in Glendale, and I still live here part time. I do have a house here, and I also live part of the time in Ajo, Arizona. Since I'm now with the Tohono O'odham Nation as a legislative council member. However, before I say any more, on behalf of the chairman Ned Norris Jr., who is probably at this moment sitting in a plane somewhere between Washington, D.C. and Glendale. Francis McGill, legislative council member representing Bamakiri District, is here and will say a few words on behalf of the chairman. Francis?
Thank you, Lynn. What I'd like to say to each and every one of you, I want to thank Norman for inviting us. On behalf of the chairman, you know, the chairman has always been with us when we do our presentations. There were four of us that were given this task of working on getting the land into trust. Lorraine Eiler, as you've met, she is the chairperson of the Natural Resources
committee for the Thomaw Nation Legislative Council. We have another member, Evelyn Juan Manuel, who heads the Budget and Finance Committee, and she couldn't be with us today. We have, this is our time of budget, so we've been tackling budgets all this past week, so she stayed behind. Also have myself, Francis Miguel, who I'm the chairperson for the Commerce Committee, and then Ned Norris Sr., who today is in Washington, D.C., or was in Washington the past 2 days testifying on natural resources. And so he's on his way back, and I know he would have been here had the time been given him. So that's all I'd like to say, and I'd like to say to each and every one of you that our presentation this evening, I hope that it will educate you, because we do know as legislative council members, even at home, your own people, they're right there, but they still don't know. They want to know. They want to be educated in order to understand, you know, what projects we may have in store for you. So with that, I ask that if there's any questions, anything you don't understand, feel free to ask. Don't go home without asking us. Ask us tonight, and we will try to give you that answer that is about the project, so that you can take it home and share it with someone else and let them know what you have heard here tonight. And that's all I'll say right now. Thank you very much.
First of all, I'd like to go over, there's four of us here. John Kelly from Tri-Advocates. Kimberly Knox from Tri-Advocates. And they've been working with us on this project. So the presentation here will take about an hour or less. And we're each going to take different parts of it. And so at the end, we'll be open for questions. And please feel free to ask. So we'll start off now by, if you look at the map there, and it shows the Tohono Nation. It's located in the southern and central part of Arizona. And our Aboriginal land also goes down into what is now Mexico. It goes down all the way to below Hermosillo, is where we have members. And we still have members that live on the other side. They are members of the tribe and do receive services from the tribe with our help and different programs that we have. But they choose to live in their home site where they've lived for generations. As you can see, the reservation is larger than Connecticut. It's a federally recognized sovereign tribe. It is the second largest tribe in Arizona, but really the second largest tribe in the United States, because Navajo is first and then the Tohono Nation. The nation is comprised of 11 districts. I am a member of San Luis District, which we'll be talking about, things that happened to San Luis and why we're here. San Luis is located just on the outskirts of Gila Bend. The other district is, as I mentioned, Mabakiri, where Francis McGill is from. We have more than 60 communities on the reservation. The center of the government is in Sells, where we have our White House, as it is known. And total enrollment is over 28,000, and about 1,500 of them are in Mexico. What you won't see next, but what I'll talk about is San Luis. San Luis was a community where in the late 1800s, they had over 22,000 acres. In the early 1900s, that was cut in half from 10,900 and some acres. In the 70s, 70s, the painted rock dam was put in place. And in the 70s, that 10,900 some acres was cut down to 40 acres. And that's where the people now live on, and since then. The people that were moved from the 10,000 some acres and moved to this tiny little 40 acre site, which is where it's not enough for the membership, and so some of them live on that little 40 acres, and then the rest live in town and elsewhere. And in fact, we have a number of them living here in the Glendale area and throughout. San Lucy suffered a great loss. With the rains that came in the 60s and 70s, there was a lot of rains, and if some of you will recall, when they released the waters and whatnot, and it went through, and also when the water went through, it carried all the trash from wherever the water started through all the riverbeds, and took all this trash down, and where did it go through? It went through the San Lucy Reservation and completely devastated the land. If you go to the area now, you will see that it still looks sick. There's nothing growing on it. And so this land was no longer good for living, no longer good for farming, and it wasn't good for anything. And the people suffered a great loss in that. The other thing that happened to them was that during this flood, their cemetery is right down there, just on the other side of the village. And their cemetery was completely inundated with water. And so here we have crosses and some of the burial sites literally coming up out of the ground and floating in the water. So here were people trying to save them and trying to catch them and trying to pick them up and doing all kinds of things. The cemetery is still there. The Army Corps of Engineers came in and put a white berm around it. But a lot of the crosses from the old burial grounds are no longer identifiable because the family that buried them there are no longer around. So that's just one of the things that the San Lucy people suffered, besides getting moved to the 40-acre site. The only thing that they saved from this, their area where they used to live in, was their church. And they had a big procession from the land where they used to live to the 40 acres. That little church now stands in the middle of their community in San Lucy. I will tell you that what this did to the people is that the elderly, the people that had these ailments, were got sick. They lost a lot of elderly people because of that. You know, physically and mentally, it really hurt a lot of them. So that is just an example of some of the things that happened to the people in San Lucy. And it's one of the things that drives me and drives our team forward is the unjust that happened to the people there, and then what the government did afterwards to try to make up for all the damages and all the losses that they've had. So that's San Lucy, and because of what happened is why we're here now. So next I will have Francis come and talk about the history of gaming. Francis has been with the nation for 19 years, and next year she will have been there 20 years. Francis?
Thank you, Lorraine. The history of gaming with the Thonogm Nation began in 1984. All we had at that time was a bingo hall. And then in 1993, when the compacts were negotiated with the state of Arizona, we at that time, we were, of course, one of the first gaming tribes with the bingo hall. We moved into Class 3 gaming. Class 3 gaming, as you know, are the slot machines. And Class 2 is bingo and those that have the little bingo cards on the side. When we moved into the 1993 venture, you know, it always happens that there's a lot of offers. People want to be the ones to manage your enterprise, and that's what happened to the Thonawanda Nation. We had offers from everywhere, meaning Harrah's, Mirage, all those big gaming facilities that you all know about. But at that time, the Thonawanda Nation decided that we were going to manage our own enterprise. And so that's exactly what we did. We didn't know anything about Class 3 gaming. We had to learn, and that's where education came in. People, our own people, were the ones that learned the business that we now enjoy today. It took a lot. We had to develop regulations that the state put out to us and said, this is what you have to go by and abide by. And that's what we had to adopt. And in the during the negotiation of our first compact, it was the Thonawanda Nation's draft compact that all the other nations used in Arizona. That was the, I guess, the template that was utilized. And so it took a lot of, there was a lot of work that went into it. But I'll say right today that I'm not sorry that we're managing on our own, that we did not go with Harrah's, that we didn't go with Mirage, or any of the others that wanted to show us the beauty of the back door that they have. We developed our own back door, which we're proud of. And then in 1999, we opened a small casino, Golden Hoshan, which is near Y, Arizona. Well, might as well say Y. We have the little casino there, and it's operating today. Then in 2001, we have the second Desert Diamond Casino, which is, if any of you have traveled on I-19 towards Nogales, you'll see that casino, which is in Sahuarita. Then in 2007, we felt that we could operate a hotel. And that's another new venture. We don't have hotels all over the nation. We had to learn that business just the same, hired good people to teach our people how to run the business. And we're very proud of that. Also, maybe some of you have come to stay at our hotel. And if not, I invite you to come. And then in 2009, this is one that we're also very proud of, is the announcement of the West Valley Resort. We're looking forward to doing the same, making it first class, something that this area will be very proud of. And so with that, I'll go into the timeline leading to the West Valley Resort project. Lorraine sort of mentioned to you, well, touched on how the acreage or the nation's loss of land back that San Lucie lost. Well, that happened in the 1970s, and then in 1983, Congressional Action Congress instructs the Department of Interior to study the issue and identify replacement lands within 100 miles. After attempts to find replacement lands fail, the nation goes back to Congress and offers a legislative settlement. Senators Goldwater and DeConcini and Congressman McCain and Udall sponsored this legislation, authorizing the nation to purchase up to 9,880 acres of unincorporated land in Pima, Pinal, and Maricopa counties. In 1986, Congress enacts PL 99503, the Gila Bend Indian Reservation Lands Replacement Act is enacted. Section 6 of the Act mandates that the Secretary of the Interior must hold in trust any replacement lands which satisfies the specific criteria set forth in the Act and the land. The land shall be deemed to be federal Indian reservation for all purposes, meaning economic development, housing, or whatever. In 1988, the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act, IGRA, which they passes legalizing gaming on Indian lands. This law limits gaming to existing tribal lands, However, this does not apply to mandatory acquisitions like those made under the Gila Bend Reservation Lands Replacement Act that are taken into trust as part of the settlement of the land claim with the federal government. In 202, many of you are familiar with Proposition 202, which is passed by Arizona voters, establishing updated guidelines for Indian gaming and ensuring continuation well into the future. It continues to allow the nation to construct two additional casinos. We have authorization to have four casinos. We have three that are operating under that's Desert Diamond One, the Desert Diamond Hotel, and also the Golden Hotshot Casino. Those are Class 3 operations. And we have one more that we can construct, and that is where the West Valley Resort will take the place of that fourth casino. Okay, the purchase of the property, the 135 acres, was purchased in 2003. And that also did not just happen overnight. It took a lot of planning. It took a lot of meetings. It didn't we just didn't come to Glendale. There was people. We have lawyers, people that went out to make sure that it was unincorporated land, because that's what the act called for. And then in 2009, also another. I think it's another thing that the Thalma Autumn came and submitted their trust application. The trust application is this thing, which keeps, which has everything from the land the environmental, anything that that was called for in the act is in that document. And that was what the Thalma Autumn Council had authorized on January 28, 2009. On the 29th, the very next day, was when we first went out to meet with individuals here, our key people, which was Mayor Scruggs, the governor, although we didn't get to meet with her that day, was her staff. And we met with our four sister tribes. The four sister tribes that we call our sisters is Akjin, Salt River, Gila River, and of course the Thalma Autumn. We all speak the same language. We understand each other. We're sisters. And we met with them, let them know that this is what we were going to start our work on, was this new venture here in the valley. So since then we've been meeting with various people. We have been sending, we have been asking for meetings. In turn, people have been calling us to, you know, to do these types of presentations that we're doing here today. So we've been everywhere. In fact, we sort of lived here a while with the EDD here in the valley, because we did have various meetings with different individuals and groups. And we're really, we met a lot of people. We've gotten to know what, getting to learn what the mix of the valley is, which is good for us, even though we live way out there in the boonies, as they call it, but we're just way out in nowhere. But in order for us to do a good job, we have to learn. So with that, I'll turn it back to Lorraine.
Thank you, Francis. As you will see, this is one of our casinos. This is down. This is the Desert Diamond Casino and Hotel, and it's our newest one. It's located at Nogales Highway. Next, this here is the Desert Diamond Casino at Pima Mine Road. This is the one that you will see. Going down 19 on your way to Nogales. What you have here before you are some of the just some of the gaming benefits that I believe Norma alluded to when she said, "You want your money?" Some of the revenues from the casino help the nation with infrastructure development, public service, programs that we have, programs that have been created, a nursing home, youth centers, dialysis centers, just a number of different programs on the reservation. But you know, we are a big reservation, and it's going to take a lot of money to do all the things that we have to do. Other examples are the San Simon Health Clinic, Health Center, as I mentioned, the Skills Nursing Facility, the Thonaugham Community College. Over $50 million in higher education scholarships has been given out. 5 recreational centers. My granddaughter's clapping because she's going through on one of those scholarships. Wow. 5 recreational centers. The Cultural Center and Museum, which is really a sight to see. That's located just on the other side of Tapawa, maybe about 5-8 miles from the Mexican border. And we've tripled the size of the police department, our fire department, and substations.
I just wanted to add to some of the what Lorraine had just given you. As far as, you know, we always have reason for doing things, and some of the reasons was for the nursing facility. We always wanted to bring our people home because they were going to outside facilities. Or there's times when people need to do something and they need to leave their elder parents somewhere for care. Well, this is how this facility operates. And the other is which Lorraine mentioned. Every year we put aside $5 million per year for scholarships for anyone. It was, and we have graduated many. Many have earned their doctorates, masters, and it just really worked for us. Something we didn't have. They always had to go outside and ask for federal funding. Sometimes they didn't get it on time, so that they lose their classes or they lose wherever they're staying. And then the other thing I wanted to mention was, as she mentioned, the triple the size of the police department. You know, a lot of times what we were doing in the past is we would train all our police officers, but when they came back, we lost them. They go back to Tucson or other neighboring communities. So what we did is we increased their salary rate and try, you know, and hope to keep them at home so that we would have, you know, adequate police protection. So that's all I wanted to add to that. Thank you.
Forest Valley Resort status. As previously mentioned, in January 2009, trust application was submitted simultaneously to the Department of the BIA and CELS. At the same time, we were here in Phoenix submitting to BIA here in Phoenix. And at the same time, our lobbyists and our lawyers submitted the application to the Department of Interior in Washington, D.C. As soon as those were submitted at 9 o'clock, we had 2 pages from 9:30, 10:30, 11:30, on and on of meetings with the mayor here in Glendale. We met with, as mentioned, we tried to meet with the governor, but unable to meet with her at that time because of a budget issue, and so we met with her staff.
We've met with the Maricopa County group. We met with, we had lunch with the four tribes, our sister tribes. It was surprising the remarks that were made. Akchen said, but just remember us, we have a chicken farm, and so when you have your restaurant, you will need a lot of eggs, so remember us. Hill River mentioned about her sand and gravel. We need sand and gravel for building. Somebody else said, you know, if we were in the same situation you're in, meaning the mandatory type, we would do the same. So we had good responses at that time, and we also tried to contact. We went out to Fort McDowell. We by phone, while we were traveling, we talked to other chairs of nations in Arizona. Then in May, we met with the regional Western Regional Office, announcing that the land announced that the land had met all requirements and that the acquisition of land is mandatory. That's what we were told in May of 2009. That's almost 6 months later, and that office was here in Phoenix that told us that. Then that announcement was to go to Washington, D.C., so we expected something within the year, but as you know, it didn't happen until just the other day. On July of 23, 2010, almost a year and a half later, the Department of Interior finally announced affirming regional office determination, and we continue to meet with local governments and communities to build positive relationships. We have met with the communities around Glendale. Everybody has been very welcoming. They have had a lot of questions, concerns, and so we've been meeting with them and trying to answer every question that they had, including the group from Kimberly Knox's office. They also have been meeting with those entities and trying to answer, and are available at any time for any questions. So next, John Kelly.
I'm trying to keep it mixed up here. Sorry about all the changes in speakers. One of the things we wanted to talk about, we wanted to convey, obviously, the generosity of the nation. All the gaming tribes are very generous to not only their communities, but the state of Arizona, and that's exactly what the policy of the state is when they allowed tribal gaming through the passage of Prop 202 in 2002. There's a financial mechanism of contribution from Indian gaming to the state and local communities. First of all, there's a percentage of gaming revenues that come from tribes. It's a sliding scale that maxes out at about 8% of gaming revenues come to the state to support education, the Heritage Fund, urgent care centers. It's in excess of $100 million annually go to those beneficial activities that benefit the citizens of the state. In addition to that, 12% of that 8% is given out every year by those gaming tribes in the form of grants to charitable organizations for infrastructure, for fire engines, for ammunition for police officers, for any number of things that communities ask for. In fact, what happens is that organizations must work through municipalities. Municipalities enter into an intergovernmental agreement with the tribes on behalf of these community organizations to fund those activities. Clearly, with the Tohono O'odham, given where they're located, they have made contributions throughout many parts of the state, some very recently in the West Valley. There was a contribution to the Challenger Center in Peoria for some educational programming. And there was a contribution for Tolleson for some public safety hardware and equipment. And so you can see, as Norma said, there is a great deal of generosity associated with this program. Just as corporations contribute to their communities frequently to benefit what communities do to provide support for them. Talked about the 12% grant program. As I said, it's a huge amount of money every year. And what's interesting about that politically is that people take it for granted. And so when you hear talk about this project potentially changing the whole gaming situation state by allowing perhaps gaming at racetracks, this project does not do that. This project is completely consistent with tribal compacts. It's within the number of facilities that they should allow to have. It's consistent with the number of machines they're allowed to have and the number of machines per facility they're allowed to have, because those are all limited and regulated and controlled by the state under the Department of Gaming. The Department of Gaming, through the compacts, also regulates the health and safety activities at those casinos. The building codes, the things we've been hearing from opponents of the project, are all part of the regulatory structure that the nation is required to be consistent with. Yeah.
Just to add, and I'm sorry, but I hope that I can give you more information, which we didn't mention, is that those tribes that do not have enough land base to operate their own casinos, in the compact, it tells us, and we agree, that we would carry them. They each have so many machines that we could, say, operate on their behalf where they can also get revenue. And hopefully that is something else that has worked. It has really worked for those tribes that doesn't have the type of land basis that we may have. So I also wanted to mention that. And, you know, on the 12% for the Thong Awesome, we all do it different. We all do our contribution different. And the Thong Awesome Nation, you know, we ask for RFPs, and then we sit down. We get 200 to 300 interested people that are requesting. And you know, it's really hard when you wish you could just fund all of them, but you can't. You have to sit and look and see which one. So we try to spread the wealth. And this time, as was mentioned, we're able to come this way and hope that we can do more for you in the future.
We're going to spend, we did some background, we want to talk a little bit more specifically about the project and the project as it's planned today. What it's planned for today may be different than what it actually turns out to be, because we're part of a dialogue, we're part of a discussion. So I'm going to have, Ox and I are going to share a little bit more details about the project itself.
All right, wonderful. John, thank you very much. It's a real pleasure to be with you. You've heard already a lot of background about the history of the what led to this project, what led to the Act of Congress that authorizes the nation to replace lands, and kind of the path of a very long journey with a huge step having been taken last Friday with the Department of the Interior's confirmation that the land qualifies for mandatory acquisition. So that puts the process in motion that we're very excited about. And now we want to turn some attention to the project itself and what it will mean to the nation, to you, to this community, to those who will be employed, both for construction purposes and in terms of permanent jobs at this wonderful, wonderful facility. Let me just preface this before we talk about the land by telling you this. Personally, I've had the pleasure of being involved in economic development projects in a variety of roles for nearly 20 years. And I will tell you that there is one thing that virtually every developer of a project like this wants. They want something for their investment. They want state government or local government to subsidize them in some fashion, to provide some benefits, to change a tax law, to provide some incentive, to set up a special district, whatever it may be. I, in fact, understand that there may have been a few of those types of projects here in Glendale over the years. This one is different than all of those. The nation has never asked for one dime of support from the state of Arizona or from any city, Glendale, Peoria, or any others. Not one dime. This project would be fully funded by the nation, and the taxpayers of the local communities in the area will not have to pay one dime to subsidize this project or the nation. In fact, quite to the contrary, the economic impact that will reverberate from the project will inure to the benefit of the surrounding communities. So let's turn now to the land, exactly where this project would be built, and John will talk about that.
Again, there's a great deal of interest in this, and this is a very familiar piece of land for many of us. If you go to the hockey games or the football games, the Cardinal Stadium is immediately south of this location. This is 91st Avenue looking north, Northern Avenue and the 101 extending that way. The parcel of land that was purchased by the nation in several years ago, it basically incorporates this square, this section, all the way here from 95th Avenue along Northern to 91st down to Orangewood. With the exception of this land, this thumb, which is actually owned by the city of Glendale. The city owns a, or doesn't own, it has an annex strip that's about 6 feet wide that goes along the northern boundary and then around and around and around. But the land itself is unincorporated, is unincorporated Maricopa County land, which is one of the requirements of the federal law, that the land that was acquired by the nation would have to be unincorporated Maricopa County land. So this is the area that originally the nation wanted to put into trust. Subsequently, the city of Glendale decided to reanimate an annexation that they started but did not complete in 2001. And that's for approximately, roughly, this area here, just a little bit south of this square that they already own, and this L shape here. This did not cover this area or this area. Well, the nation was forced to dispute that annexation as violating their rights to protest the annexation. That's gone through court process. Glendale prevailed in the first round. It's under appeal. So that land being in question as to whether it's unincorporated or annexed city of Glendale land, we left this land available because, as you can see, this is Kells High School, by the way. The nation wanted to develop as far away from the high school as possible. They wanted the access to come from 95th. They wanted to keep the traffic flow away from 91st Avenue and reduce the impact on some of the residential neighborhoods over here, as well as the high school. And we've been talking extensively with the Peoria Unified School District about potential impacts and things we can do to remediate and mitigate those impacts. So this is the land that the nation amended their application to the Department of Interior and said, asking instead of taking this whole land into trust, to just consider this and hold off on this decision until such time as that whole status could get cleared up. So that's where we stand today. So this is the land that is the subject, 52 acres approximately, of the 135 acres that the nation originally acquired.
So let's start with the nature of the overall project that the nation envisions. And this is a very large project that will bring a number of elements to bear. You've probably heard a lot more about the casino than all of the other parts of the project. In fact, some people only refer to it as the casino. Well, this is a hotel, convention center, and yes, casino. It is a very comprehensive, large, four-star level development. You saw the photos of what has been recently developed in the Tucson area. And if you talk to people in the Tucson area, I believe you will hear that they are very pleased, very, very pleased with the quality of that development. The difference is this one will be several times larger than that one. The population base here supports it. The land area that is available supports it. And so it is possible here to build the kind and quality of size of development that will complement all of what surrounds it. It will complement the Sports and Entertainment District. It will complement Westgate. It will complement Camelback Ranch. And we could go on and on with all the other facilities that exist. So, a hotel, 600 rooms. Rooms that, by the way, would be extremely helpful for things like attracting more events to the area, like the Super Bowl and the Final Four and events of that nature. It would include all of the hotels, the amenities that you would expect with a large hotel, and an expansive convention center that will provide additional meeting space to augment the needs of the surrounding community. Then turning to the casino would be around 100,000 square feet, which is about one-tenth or so of the overall size of the development. It would have over 1,000 slot machines, which would max out the number that the nation is entitled to have under its compact with the state of Arizona, as well as table games, a bingo hall, and all of the other food and beverage amenities that you would expect. I would guess that many of you have at one time or another been to one of the other casinos in the metropolitan Phoenix area. So I think you know the types of facilities that the nation and its sister tribes have been building. They are top-rate facilities, and this will be likewise. The only difference will be its location, because it will be the only one within 20-some miles of this area. Now, the economic impacts. The economic impacts are quite significant. And we are all hearing a lot about jobs in an economy where we continue to struggle, where the unemployment rate in Arizona has continued to climb, even as the national rate has started to come down. We are in a long, tough recovery. This project, in my judgment, would be a very attractive project, even if the economy were smoking hot. But obviously, the economy is not smoking hot. And to have the opportunity to create 6,000 good construction jobs, to be followed once the facility opens with 3,000 permanent jobs, is a hugely attractive opportunity. It would bring more than $300 million in annual economic impact to the region. It's kind of like having a Super Bowl every year. 1.2 million visitors per year to the facilities, whether they're there just to go to the casino, or whether they're there for a convention, or to stay there for purposes of attending some of the events in the sports and entertainment district. Next slide. So we, I think what you've heard earlier from Lorraine and Francis, and what you have heard, if you have ever heard Chairman Norris speak to this, is a commitment to this being a partnership. The nation has enjoyed a close partnership with Tucson and Pima County over the years with respect to those facilities, and seeks the same here in the West Valley. And the reception that the nation has received overall has been very good and positive, and we see continued evidence of very strong public support. Those partnership opportunities extend into a number of areas. Let's talk about infrastructure for a moment. Obviously, for a facility of this size, you have to have access to water, wastewater, and transportation facilities. The nation has always expected, fully expects, that if it enters into an arrangement with a local government for those types of things, they're going to pay their fair share for them. They're not going to ask any municipality to provide that for nothing. They fully expect that that comes with the territory. That's part of opening a facility like this, just as if it were any other developer, except that they probably would be more fair than some developers about that, right? Public safety is another issue. These facilities, contrary to some of the rhetoric that was thrown around 10 to 15 years ago, have turned out, as they have opened, to be some of the safest facilities, of large facilities with lots of people in the state. Any claim that these facilities are going to create, you know, huge problems in terms of public safety, just simply the facts do not support that assertion. But again, to the extent that the nation chooses to provide law enforcement and fire protection services on its own for these facilities, they do that, they can do that. Or if they enter into a partnership or an arrangement with the local community for assistance in that regard, then they are going to be committed to paying what is fair for those services.
and always have been, and always will be. Those are some of the impacts. But I think the big ones are when you look at the economic activity that results from this, the jobs that are created from this, the income taxes that the people who have those jobs will be paying, the sales taxes that those people will pay for their purchases, the fact that the federal law specifically contemplated that even though this would be reservation land, which is not subject to the property tax system, the federal legislation specifically contemplated payments in lieu of taxes. All of you have heard of Salt River Project. Many of you are probably SRP customers. SRP is not subject to the property tax system. They make payments in lieu of taxes. It's really not any different. So there are lots of positive tax benefits, economic benefits, job creation benefits from this project. And we believe that for all of what surrounds it, it will be a huge net positive. Obviously, there are some who do not seem to understand or accept that point of view. But we encourage you to learn more about the project, to visit the website that is addressed on the handout that we've given you. And we certainly would appreciate all of your support as we continue to move forward. Last Friday's announcement, a huge positive step. I will tell you from working with Lorraine and Francis and the chairman and others, they are absolutely committed to moving this project forward to completion, to opening, and to operations. But they are equally committed to doing those things the right way as partners with the surrounding communities and as good neighbors to all of the people in the West Valley, just as just the same kind of relationship that they have enjoyed in Tucson and Pima County over the years. So with that, we, I think, have one more item, and the honors go to Francis.
Okay, for our final, I know it's mentioned that we have been asking for meetings, and in turn, meetings have been asked of us. One of the meetings that we have never actually gone except for an hour in the past year was with the City Council of Glendale. Today we sent out another request in hope that all our differences will be set aside and that we can work on this project. I will read it to you. Dear Mayor Scruggs, it has been 18 months since we first discussed the Thelma Autumn Nation's plans to have land at 95th and Northern Avenues taken into trust for the purposes of developing a first-class resort and casino facility. As you know, on July 23, 2010, the U.S. Department of Interior, DOI, announced its intent to take Parcel 2 of the nation's property near 95th and Northern Avenues into trust on behalf of the nation. This decision was only made after more than a year of comprehensive examination in which DOI reviewed all relevant law related to this issue. This decision mirrors the Western Regional Director's findings in May and June of 2009. With this announcement, it is my sincere hope that we can set aside our differences and past misunderstandings and begin having a dialogue to the benefit of both our communities as well as the entire state of Arizona. Since we first met, it has become even clearer to me that we have a great many mutual interests and that a constructive partnership between the city and the nation could assist you and the city in accomplishing many of your goals. In the past 18 months, we have retained an architectural firm, planners, and engineers to continue work on site plans. We continue to be prepared to sit down with you and develop a comprehensive process to address infrastructure needs and concerns with this project. A meeting would also go a long way in dispelling some of the inaccurate information on this issue. For example, the nation has no intention of building a temporary, quote, tent structure for structures on the property. Rather, it has always been our intent that this development be a world-class resort. We are on record in support of proposed plans for the development of Northway Parkway, which you have championed. We fully intend to pay for any water and wastewater services which we use and to come to agreement with neighboring cities on agreements on any other pertinent infrastructure matters. The nation has a long and positive track record in addressing these matters elsewhere, as was evidenced by the various IGAs and MOUs already in place with the city of Tucson, the town of Sawarita, and others. I fully understand that as elected leaders, our first commitment is to represent the interests of our constituents to the best of our ability. The West Valley Resort will create 6,000 construction and more than 3,000 ongoing jobs, as well as annual revenues for the Glendale community. West Valley and the state of Arizona in excess of $300 million. When complete, our resort will complement the other sports and entertainment assets of Westgate, helping to drive traffic and businesses to the area so that it may achieve the promise that Glendale's leaders have envisioned. My hope is that we can sit down on behalf of our respective communities and begin discussing how we can work together to the benefit of all. Please contact me at your earliest convenience. Ned, Dr. Ned Norris Jr., Chairman, Tohono O'odham Nation. Thank you.
Take questions from anybody in the audience. I don't know if you want to know.
Okay. Any questions? Precise? To the point.
I'm Councilmember Clark. I represent the Yucca District. I represent the district in which this casino would be sited if it were to come to Glendale. You notice I say to Glendale. Not to an unincorporated area, but to Glendale. Now, you have heard that many surrounding communities support the casino. That is true. Peoria would love to see the casino come to Glendale. Tolleson would love to see the casino come to Glendale. If the shoe were on the other foot and it were coming to their communities, I'm not so sure they would be as thrilled. Now, the majority of my constituency does not want the casino. I represent the majority of my constituency. I have just one question. One question for the gentleman, either gentleman. What direct and tangible benefits will the city of Glendale derive as a result of the siting of this casino within Glendale?
Knox, John.
Well, Council Member Clark and members of the audience, I think we discussed that, but we may have to agree to disagree about that. But let's go back and review. First of all, does Glendale and the surrounding communities have an unemployment rate? Are there construction workers who are not currently fully employed? Are there other people who would like to have jobs at a convention center, conference center? I think I'm going to stop there, because to me, that is a hugely tangible benefit when you're creating thousands of jobs without seeking one job in the public sector. Yes,
thank you. I'm going to ask you to expound on something that you have covered, but I have a very good reason for asking that. Recently, at one of our forums for the people who are running for council, our present councilman, David Millay, laid out a long, rambling list of terrible things that the casino is going to do to the city of Glendale. One of the things that he said, I will ask a question and see what you respond to. I won't try to read the whole thing because it just about accuses you of everything except exposing us to leprosy. Now, Mr. Goulet said that many times the city has asked you for information and asked you to have somebody meet with them to go over the things that concern Glendale. I don't know who's going to believe that, and I do know a lot of people are going to believe you, but would you respond to his statement that they have asked you many times to meet with them?
Sure, thank you. Very good question. One of the things I want to make clear is that the Economic Development Delegation, our organization, and others have met with literally 300 different individuals and organizations over the last 18 months on this question. The first person we met with on this whole project was Mayor Scruggs. The day after the Legislative Council formally approved the decision to move forward with the project. And we had a very good, cordial conversation. We didn't expect her to say she supported it. We didn't expect her to say that she opposed it. We expected her to listen and to ask questions, to have concerns, and we believe that was the beginning of, and the start of a very good process. Subsequently, we tried to reach out to members of council on numerous occasions. We requested meetings. All those meetings were denied, with the exception of Councilman Lieberman, who met with us and was very gracious, and it has been supportive of the project. We also arranged for and had asked for repeatedly a meeting with city staff to start to begin the process of going through the variety of tangible development concerns that any city would have about a development that was adjacent to the lands that they were that jurisdiction over. That meeting did take place on March 23rd of 2009. About a week or 10 days prior to that, we received a letter from the city manager's office asking us to provide, in that meeting, detailed information about all the things that potentially could be of concern. The meeting lasted 60 minutes, less time than we've spent tonight talking about this. You can see it's a big project. There's a lot of issues, a lot of potential concerns. And at the close of that meeting, Chairman Norris said, what we would like to propose is a process whereby our experts, our staff, get together with your experts and your staff. We come up with a list of issues to go through, and we start working through this. We can't possibly anticipate going through every single concern in this hour-long meeting, so let's do that. Then we believe that that was the agreement from that meeting. I think Knox were in attendance at that meeting. 2 weeks later, the city council met and voted to oppose the project, and that was pretty much the end of the dialogue. Subsequently, we did meet with a couple members of council. I was at that meeting with members of the Economic Development Delegation, and not a single question was asked of the Economic Development Delegation. So we have attempted, we're at a standstill right now, and it's very frustrating because when people of goodwill are trying to reach out, it's very important that somebody reach back. And I think what we're hoping for is not, from this dialogue, not that you come out of here saying, I support the casino, or I support this resort. We want you to say, I want you to support a conversation, get those issues on the table, and figure out how much it's going to cost, and how much you're going to put, and how much you need, and make sense of us. That's all we're asking.
Next.
Yes, Martin. My name is Martin Samaniego. I'm president of the Glendale Elementary School Board and a former city councilman. I'd like to ask two questions. One, what costs will the city incur if this resort is built? And two, I didn't see anything there with regard to what type of benefits could the Glendale Elementary School Board district, because we're strapped and losing revenue at a tremendous rate. So maybe you could talk about those two things.
Thank you. Francis?
I'd like to start off with mentioning the school. We did meet with the school superintendent and a couple of the board members, I believe. And that was one of the things we talked about, well, how we could work together in developing some type of the buffer zone, that, as we call it. And we, you know, we made it clear that we had similar situation when we were building the Nogales Highway Casino because of the school area. And so we're very familiar with working together with the city and coming up with just the right, the right buffer in order to keep the children away from the facility. And it's worked. Today it is working in Sahuarita. So this is something that they were very gracious, and they wanted to work with us. They said, you know, to sit down with them and talk about whatever the issues are. And I said, we have children too. We're not people without children. We have children, and we know what it takes. We know what we want them not to, you know, be involved in. Our awesome kids are no different. They're no different from your children. And so they're very gracious in those areas, and I think that's very important for parents to know that there is something that we have worked out for our children and your children.
Just a quick point on that. Because this project has been in such flux over the last 18 months, because the land has been in dispute, because of the annexation litigation, it's been hard to sort of settle on what the project is going to look like. But we have certain intentions in terms of what the nation believed was the right way to go, but we didn't want to presume anything. We wanted to have an open conversation. We presumed that there would need to be some sort of transportation development on the west side of the property along 95th. There would have to be some egress off the 101, one way or the other. There's probably going to have to be some costs associated with extension of infrastructure. We assume that will be a part of any discussion, that costs will have to be determined, and the nation will and has been committed to making good on paying their fair share of what those infrastructure costs would be. As far as Glendale Elementary, I know we've spent a lot of our time communicating with Peoria Unified School District. I think that the nation has a superb history of supporting education in their communities. They certainly want to extend that approach. In fact, Chairman Norris was on the school board of Sunnyside District down in Tucson, and was instrumental that the nation was, along with the Pasquayaki tribe, in developing a laptop program for that district, for the high schools. And I think they want to bring that kind of approach to working in partnership with community entities, whether it's the school districts, charitable organizations, or governments, to identify the needs and help provide for those needs. And we've been doing that with contributions to community organizations over the last 18 months in this region.
Okay. Thank you. Gentlemen.
I just wanted to ask a question. It was mentioned that in the comment by the councilwoman from Glendale that Peoria wanted to have a casino in Glendale, and it kind of confused me. Perhaps you could clarify which city has given you a greater amount of cooperation, and within that, which city is more capable of providing you the support and the infrastructure that you need or that a casino would need. Thank you.
I'm just going to, by way of answer, we're not the architects or the engineers, so I think there's a lot of room for conversation in that area. As you can see here, this is the Northern Avenue, and this represents the boundary between Glendale and Peoria, Glendale being on the south side, Peoria on the north side. Mayor Barrett has been very supportive of the project. He believes that it'll lead to a number of other economic spinoffs and capabilities for a lot of the other developments in that area, Peoria Crossing and others. And so we've enjoyed very good dialogue. We've started to meet with city staff in Peoria to at least begin to scope out some of the needs for the site. But again, since we didn't know until last week that we had a site, those haven't extended, gone as far as they should. Beyond that, I just would tell you that the nation has been committed to dialogue with every city that has an interest in having dialogue.
What about infrastructure? Which city can provide a greater amount?
I really am not in a position to answer that because I haven't studied the plans. I know that will be a part of the development projects that Knox and I have been part of. We always have seen very strong public outreach, public meetings where those kinds of things are presented. People get an opportunity to comment on those specific technical and engineering kinds of features. Neither Knox nor I, our engineers, you write a good sentence.
Yeah, I think what we know is that both Glendale and Peoria are large cities who are very capable providing infrastructure for development of this nature. But in terms of the details of that and whether one is in a better position than the other, or one is more willing than the other, and all of that, that's part of the type of dialogue that needs to take place. And as we've said, it takes two parties to have a dialogue.
Thank you.
Next, Martin.
Just to follow up, and thank you for your comments, but I would encourage you and look forward to meeting with the nation to talk about the Glendale Elementary School District and some dialogue so we could begin to see what benefits will be mutual for the tribe and to Glendale Elementary School District. And I thank you for your presentation.
I got a question. If you've been talking to Peoria, if you're talking about taking the lane off of 101, the traffic, has Peoria made an effort to help split that cost on Northern Avenue? As you talk to them, if you've been talking to them, I'm just wondering if you bring that up in the future, if this does go through, I know should not foot the full bill for taking that lane off.
We haven't gotten to that point.
Okay.
While you're here, I'm thinking on my concern that I think most, I don't think people are either for or against the casino so much, is they're for or against more debt and more spending and more, everybody wants jobs, everybody wants, I have no problem with casinos, I love going to Vegas, but right now we've cut into a budget that's going to continue to diminish because property values are still depreciating. And I know that real well since I'm a realtor. So that's where we get our sources of income. So we have to put out more money when we've already this past year cut into library time, closed pools. We've done all of those things to our people. And I think the people's opinion needs dialogue is great, I'm for that, but people are really going to want to know the bottom line because they can't afford to give up one more thing. They just can't do it. We're broke.
John, and then
I just want to underline one thing that Knox mentioned, that the law that Congress passed to allow this very unique exception to occur anticipated that kind of concern and specifically calls for payment in lieu of taxes for property taxes that you might otherwise receive. Right now, it's county jurisdiction land, and so any county, any property taxes, right now it's taxed in agricultural level, but the property, the payment in lieu of taxes would be based on the actual value of the activities taking place there, and that's obviously subject to discussion with the federal government, as we know.
Thank you. Norma?
What I heard was that they want to talk to the city about the water, the sewer, and they're willing to pay their share, which means it's not going to cost the city anything. Or if it is going to cost, they're going to pay it. One of the things that we have to make sure is that when we say a district doesn't want it, then I have a problem with that. I don't believe in 10, 15 people dictating in any district. If we need to, and this is what we can do, I want to win, but I'm not there yet. But you're more powerful outside because the politicians have to work for you. Because if they don't, then we work in getting the politicians out. And let us not insult. I don't like insults from either one. Two, I think the mayor has done a good job of insulting her fellow politicians. We're not going to do that here. But we are going to, and I hope Councilmember Clark takes it back to the council, that they are not going to decide what's best for us. We will decide what's best for us. And if we have to, it is our option to take a petition and put it up to the vote of the people, not just one district. Yes.
Can I respond?
Yes.
Do you want the mic?
Only if you think I need it.
Yeah.
I agree with a lot of what you said. I believe if there were petitions passed around, I have no problem with that. I'm one of the few council members on staff, or who is a council member, who regularly goes back to the people in my district and asks them. I have a personal email list that has at least 500 people on it. When this issue came up, I polled those people. I've talked to a lot of other people in my district. I'm not blowing smoke. There are a lot of people who live around this proposed site who really don't want the casino. They really don't. One email that I got that I have never forgotten to this day is a man who lives over on 73rd South of Bethany. And he said, you know, the one reason I'm opposed to the casino, and this is strictly a moral issue for him, he said, my wife is a gambling alcoholic. And he said, I can keep it under control because she has to travel so far to gamble that it's not too much of a problem. He said, I'm scared to death. Y'all build that casino, she'll be over there every day. And that's a moral issue, and that has nothing to do with whether it's appropriate to have a casino in Glendale or not. There are a lot of things that I heard tonight, and I wish I had had a chance to talk to you all in rebuttal, I guess, because some of the things I'm hearing are accurate from people that have spoken tonight. Some of the things are not accurate. So maybe what Nora said, she said best, and what they said, educate yourselves. Listen to both points of view. Don't make up your mind yet.
Why don't you educate us right now?
Only if I have permission. I mean, I can't just unilaterally do it. Okay. All right. Just, you know, I made a lot of notes, and I'm not going to go through every note because it would take, I think, another hour. But
you've got 7 minutes
to start with.
Don't let me either.
I'm that pretty good. Sorry. But I'm trying to establish a dialogue as they've been talking about. They talked about their sister tribes and how they've had dialogue with their sister tribes. Are the Gila River Indian tribes on record as supporting your casino project? Anybody can answer.
I also
can
answer.
I want you to go ahead and ask the questions with the city, your part as a council woman, and then...
You've got 4 minutes of video left. Go.
Well, that was one question. I happen to know that the Gila River Indian Tribe does not support this particular venture, yet that's one of their sister tribes.
Do you know why?
I know a lot of reasons why, but we've got 4 minutes, so let me raise a couple of other questions for you to think about. Now, we talk about what the impact would be on Glendale. There are a couple of things that you should know. Since it would be sovereign land, there's no way we're going to get any sales tax. Normally, when a new project comes into Glendale, they pay impact fees, which are their share of paying for the infrastructure, like a library, which we don't have on the west side, a swimming pool that we don't have on the west side, more police, more fire. That's all incorporated in impact fees that do not come to the city of Glendale because they're a sovereign nation and they don't have to pay it. They talk about paying their fair share for infrastructure. Well, I'm concerned. Our water bills keep going up, right? They went up twice this year.
You okay. Can raise them, young lady.
Yes, I can.
You have been up there long enough. We didn't
yes, I did.
You.
Yes, I did raise
something.
Mr. Jones,
not here.
Mr. Jones, yes, I am.
And I am
acknowledging
heard out of you tonight. You last me forever.
Good.
And I think most of the people here have.
Well, if that's the way you feel, I mean, we're talking about dialogue, but if you don't want to have dialogue, I'm fine with that, too.
Everybody, we need to settle down and show some respect. Okay? Please. We really need that. Okay. I think we would have to have a meeting, and remember, Joyce Clark is not the decision maker. There's others with her. So we need to go to the council. We need to get the council to ask the questions and to meet with this nation. They have not done that. Now, we don't have a park. Boy, I know that. We don't have a park in the west side. Why? Because they're putting it up north. And that's the truth. Before they were going to put the park, they voted to do foothills. And that is the truth.